The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your hosts for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. We're the show that wants you to become more successful by reducing risk, saving you money, and increasing your efficiency. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and in the studio today is my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler, and our very special guest, entrepreneur, innovator, and master disruptor, Jedediah Yue. Jonathan, before we begin, why don't you remind the folks what GIG does?
Certainly. So just so that we can make this really crystal clear, Guardian Insight Group is a specialized management consulting firm that approaches things differently. And the theme of today's conversation with Jedediah, we are the disruptors of how business gets done. If you need immediate assistance or if you have a project that you're working on that can't be handled in the traditional sense, give us a call at 1-888-388-6739 or 1-888-388-OPEX.
So back to Jedediah, known to his friends as Jed. Jed founded Delphix and is also the chairman of Delphix since 2008. He served as the CEO and president until 2016. And more interestingly, Jed founded a company called Avamar, which I did business with back in the 2000s. He had sold that in 2006 for $165 million in cash. So when we talk about entrepreneurs, Jed's the real deal. Jed also, when he was quite young, was a U.S. presidential scholar under former President George H. Bush, and has had a number of academic achievements. Jed has just written a book. It's coming out next week called Disrupt or Die. So, Jed, why don't you start off telling us a little bit about your book?
The book is called Disrupt or Die, What the World Needs to Learn from Silicon Valley to Survive in the Digital Era. And I'm really talking about how do you disrupt, how do you build applications that can take down new markets. It's getting easier than ever to disrupt companies and industries and even the world. And so the book really lays a foundation of all the different frameworks I've used to build my software companies. The funny thing is, when I started out, I was an English major in college, and I had no desire to build a business. I had no desire to go into tech. A lot of my friends thought that I would never be successful as an entrepreneur, much less in software and technology. And yet over time, I really learned how to build products and how to scale products and how to form companies around them. And that's really what I'm sharing in the book.
So you're the accidental entrepreneur, so to speak.
Absolutely an accidental entrepreneur. I didn't want to start a business when I was a kid. I didn't have a paper route and I wasn't trying to sell things on the stand on the corner. You know, I thought I would be an author, and it turns out I was at least partly right.
Yeah, it just took a little bit longer to get to that route, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a way to give back, too, to help people realize that there's this innovation glass ceiling that people have in their minds. They believe that innovation and building software and apps is something for the tech titans, people who have a lot of training. And we read these books like Malcolm Gladwell's book where he talks about 10,000 hours to become an expert in anything. But it didn't take me that many hours to come up with the idea for my first software company. It probably only took about 500 hours of searches on Yahoo to really master the concepts that created the idea for my first company. And so those things aren't true anymore. The world is changing. It's changing faster than ever. It's easier than ever to build innovative products.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. When we were preparing for the show, one of my friends who develops products, we were talking about Jed and the work he's done in the past, and we were comparing you to Guy Kawasaki, except the difference is that you've actually built products.
Not to knock Mr. Kawasaki or anything, but you're absolutely right.
That's one of the big differences with this book compared to the classics on innovation. If you look at things like The Innovator's Dilemma or The Lean Startup Method, they're not written by people who've actually built software products. My software products have sold over $4 billion. They've driven a lot in revenue. And if you're going to teach people about innovation, you should have done it yourself. You should really deeply understand the subject matter. An academic point of view simply can't master the frameworks and the concepts because they don't understand how they're implemented day to day.
Very good point. If I can ask, yeah, I just want to go into this because let's just put it this way. Not only is your title Disrupt or Die, but your book is a disruptive tool in and of itself, if I can make that leap.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sharing the frameworks of what I've used to implement my companies and everything I've learned from all the founders, CEOs, entrepreneurs here in Silicon Valley. So I'm really sharing the secrets in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, and you're also on a couple of different innovation councils right now, correct?
Yeah, I'm on the Forbes Technology Council as an example.
And you're using those as potential platforms to share this ideology or share this approach as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's a way to give back to the next generation of technologists, and not just here in Silicon Valley, but all over the world.
Yeah, that's an awesome approach to things. Keith?
Yeah, no, I think, Jed, you talked on the Innovator's Dilemma. Why don't you explain a little bit about what Clay Christensen had talked about in his book?
In The Innovator's Dilemma, he talks about one method of disruption, bottom-up disruption, where you have new entrants go after big existing legacy companies. They come in, they go after the underserved small niche part of the market. They have a simpler product. And over time, after they've built a base with this niche market, they move upstream. That really only categorizes a single version of disruption that we see today. There are a lot of ways that you can disrupt companies today. And my book catalogs many of these different branches of innovation and disruption. As an example, if you look at the iPhone or the iPod and the iPad, that's really a different method of disruption. It's over the top. They didn't go after a small niche market. They went after the top of the market. And if you look at something like the iPhone, it does have a simple UI, but it's loaded with sensors, loaded with technology, incredibly complex inside. It's coupled with an application store that gives rise to so many features and functions in each of these different apps. It's an over-the-top method of disruption. And then when Amazon went and bought Whole Foods, they really changed the game on disruption. Now legacy companies, they don't just have to worry about bottom-up disruption or over-the-top product disruption. They have to worry about actually having entire companies like the number 2, the number 5, the number 12 company in their industry get eaten wholesale and their entire industry getting disrupted.
Yeah. Big point. Sorry, Keith. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I mean, that's a really great point because I think just because the book is titled Silicon Valley, this isn't just about technology disruption, right?
It isn't. It's really about what changes in the entire world. If you look at companies like Facebook and Google and people like Elon Musk, they're having an enormous impact on the world. And many times they're having an impact that is completely opposite of what they intended. These polar unintended consequences that we see play out today.
Like the boring company idea that Elon recently surfaced, you know, sitting in traffic.
Yeah, that's a great example. I don't know if you guys have ever watched The Incredibles, but at the very end of The Incredibles, there's this guy called the Mole Man who comes up and he's, you know, tunneling under cities to bring down big cities. Imagine what AI could do with some of these boring machines that Elon Musk is building.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Hyperloop in and of itself as a concept is something that I've actually done a little bit of homework on. And I know that he's trying really seriously to bring that into big cities, but also the smaller underserved communities too. So,
and I don't know if you've seen his recent videos where he's showing how you can put people on rockets and launch them across the world, and you can go from any major city to any major city in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah.
But these are all things that in the hands of AI could be used against us.
Yeah. Good point.
Yep. So let's hold that thought. We have a lot to cover today, and we're going to talk about more disruptive models.
Yeah. So don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to take a little deeper dive into what Jed says is going on with more in the innovation world and challenge just two of the many innovation models that we've been preaching, you know, or preached to over the last few years. If you want for more information on Jed's book or want to schedule a consultation with Guardian Insight Group on how to disrupt yourself or your business, give us a call at 1-888-388-6739 or visit us at gigsv.biz. That's gigsv.biz. And we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. Today, we're very pleased to have in studio Jedediah Yue, or Jed, to his friends. We're talking about his new book, Disrupt or Die, and we've been going over some of the tried and true models of disruption that were innovation that have been talked about in the past. We were covering the innovator's dilemma, and now we're also going to be talking about the lean startup. So, Jed, why don't you help us out with what the lean startup was all about?
Lean startup is really about iterative development of your product and your idea, taking your ideas out from the four walls of your company and reviewing it with customers, having pivots to your original business idea and product idea if you need to have them, using methodologies like Agile. So it's all about faster time to market with smaller increments and testing them and validating them. The problem with something like the lean startup method is iterative trial and error isn't a strategy. It's just common sense. And the problem, if you don't have clear product vision, everything gets harder. And so rather than put the responsibility on the world outside of the entrepreneur, go out and test your ideas with people, I think it's more important for entrepreneurs to really sit back and develop the skills to think clearly about markets and products. The way I develop products is a process I call thinking big and small. And that's really where I think the emphasis should be placed because it saves entrepreneurs so much time and so much effort. I think the lean startup method is a siren's call. It pulls all these people to be entrepreneurs who aren't ready, who don't have great product vision yet. And it also has it has two really big problems. One is survivorship bias. The companies that succeed with the lean startup method are the very few. They're hundreds of thousands of companies that are iterating and pivoting that fail. And if you don't see all of those in the numbers, or they're not going to talk about how the lean startup method worked for them, they failed. All you have are the very few that seem to succeed because of it, but they're just the small percentage that would have succeeded anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we talked about it before the show that I used to work with a company that fully embraced lean startup method. And we talk about it in blogs and in articles where Eric Rice, the author of Lean Startup, would come and do seminars for us. And it was okay, but we would come with 400 ideas a year, and maybe just a handful ever became products. And, I mean, this is a company with billions in resources. So it's interesting, to your point, that there are many startups who are just not prepared to use that methodology.
Exactly. And if you develop the mental frameworks, if you develop how you think about products and markets, you can save yourself so much wasted effort. The other problem with going out with your ideas and meeting with customers is that you are beset with small sample bias. Whatever small number of customers you can talk to, they're unlikely to really represent the entire market of customers. And when you go to them and you review your products and you set up product reviews, you have an agenda. You can't disassociate yourself from what you already believe and what you think and the agenda that you're presenting. The other problem is you might have a couple users who are very vocal, who are very articulate, and if they don't happen to match the bulk of the market that you're going after or your initial target market segments, they can actually lead you as astray as they can direct you in the right direction.
So you're a startup founder, CTO, and you're listening to what we're saying right now, that the innovator's dilemma has a very narrow set of criteria, and that the lean startup that we've all embraced may not be for you. What are some of the nuggets in your book or the insight that you have for these startups?
I should go into a little bit more detail about thinking big and small. I think one of the really key things that people need to do in the world if they want to be an innovator is they need to find what I call a value seam. A value seam is this big gaping hole that emerges in the market over time. There are economic trends or there are major factors changing in the industry, or you can see declines in how the user experiences functioning within an industry. If you see these kinds of things emerging, this gaping hole in a market, those are the holes that really need to be filled by applications and technology. When I started my first software company, I saw a really big hole opening up in the data protection market for enterprise tape backup. Back in those days, you could see already you had TiVo and you had iPods, you had MP3 players, things that were taking consumer data on tapes and moving onto disk. And the tape backup industry for enterprises, people were backing up the same data over and over again. It was a terrible industry, really hard to get backups to complete successfully, really hard to restore the data. Tapes are very fallible media. Everything takes a long time. And you had disk plummeting on a per gigabyte basis compared to tape. And if you look at all of those factors, that was a really big value seam. I could see there was a big gaping hole that just needed to be filled. Then it's just a matter of identifying the specific – now this is thinking small – the specific small technology and software application that you can build that gives you power over that value seam.
Seems pretty simple, ironically.
That's right.
And yet it's one of those things where in Silicon Valley, especially like you alluded to in the last segment, the people who aren't quite ready to become entrepreneurs, they may come up with part of that value seam consideration, but not the entire picture. What happens in a situation like that? I mean, would you counsel, like Keith alluded to, a CTO or somebody who's in a startup situation, where would you go with them if they were to come to you and say, hey, I've got this idea, but it's not fully baked?
That's where a lot of the frameworks come into play in the book. So if you have a part of an idea, there are quite a number of frameworks that help you break it down. Like, what exactly is the product that you're building? Well, it's not just a technology. It's not just an application. There are other things that really have to be baked into the overall making of the product today. For instance, you really want to understand your go-to-market strategy and your business model. These become part and parcel of your product. You can actually bake them into your applications today, so you need to consider these factors right up front. And so these are the types of frameworks that are shared in the book. If you haven't polished everything and you haven't thought through all the different angles that you really need to master, the book is designed to give you those frameworks to help you complete the thought.
This is like the masterclass on business planning, but it's more than that because it's entrepreneurial thinking to the next level, in my estimation.
And some parts of the book aren't just about entrepreneurial thinking. It's just how to think about things in the world. For instance, I think one of the core things, one of the key things that great entrepreneurs master is what I call the disconfirmation bias. Everybody tends to like to hear things that confirm what they believe. If we have an idea or you want to try something, you tell your family and friends and you want happy talk. You want people to tell you, that's a great idea, that's wonderful, you should pursue it. But happy talk is what creates future failures. What you really want to do is to test your ideas, to find what is wrong with your ideas, to challenge your ideas, because only through that crucible do you harden your ideas and make them durable and survivable.
So it's removing your ego from the equation if you are a true entrepreneur and letting people put bullets in everything that you're trying to do.
So how do you help people? Because they're going to go back and say, well, that's exactly what the Lean Startup says, right? The Lean Startup says build, measure, and learn. How is that different?
What I'm talking about is using the crucible inside the two between your ears as opposed to going outside, because it's much faster to do iterations by understanding concepts and eliminating these branches of useless work if you can do it inside your head. That is the fastest place where you can iterate and get to something solid. Once you really do have a crystal product idea like I had at Avmar or at Delphix, once we begin shipping the product and we're building the UIs, of course, you can then just sit down with customers and validate those things. But I never had to iterate because I had a clear vision of the product. When I sat down with customers, they said, I want that. I would buy that if you ship it. And at Delphix, for instance, we shipped product within a year. Our first customer was Staples. We added, 30 of the Fortune 100 over the course of the next couple of years. We have, 30, 40% of the Fortune 500 now as customers as we've scaled up the company.
No, that's great. And I think we should mention you are offering your book on October 10th. It's releasing.
10-10.
New book available on Amazon. And for the first 2 days, the 10th and 11th, you're offering it for 99 cents.
Yeah, the ebook's available for 99 cents. And you learn everything that I've learned and all the frameworks I've used to build $4 billion worth in software products for 99 cents.
That's fantastic. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit further again about the two approaches that we've been hearing about, the Lean Startup and the Innovator's Dilemma, with Jed Yue, who is an entrepreneur and founder of Delphix and several other companies and has a tremendous experience as an entrepreneur and business person here in Silicon Valley. And we'll be right back. This is Guardian Insights with Keith Koo and Jonathan Ziegler. www.gigsv.biz, GIGSV.biz.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and in the studio is my co-host, Jonathan Ziegler, and our very special guest, entrepreneur, Jedediah Yue. Jed, why this book, Disrupt or Die? Why now?
The goal and the mission for the book is to democratize innovation. For too long, we have innovation and development of software and applications tightly held in a small location here in Silicon Valley. We have the tech elites, the tech titans who are getting ever and ever richer. And what we really need to do is enable a world of innovation to spread that across all parts of the country and the world and all different types of people. A more diverse set of founding teams need to be successful. You might be an individual in middle America, or maybe you're an executive in a big big legacy company. This book is designed to help everybody innovate.
That's great. And I think we talked about this before the show, that a lot of those tech titans you're referring to, whether they're aware of it or not, and not just in the technology industry, large enterprises everywhere, they're going to get disrupted whether they know it or not.
The innovation cycle is the wheel that turns our world, and it's getting faster. And even the tech titans, even the really great super tech superpowers, the biggest companies, the Apples and the Amazons and the Alphabets, they'll all eventually get ground into dust by the next wave of innovations. And the idea for this book is to help people find those innovations.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I mean, one of the things that I've recently heard is that the quote-unquote most innovative companies in the world today don't innovate nearly the way that they did when they were founded or when they were starting. That it's a slower cycle for them because there's more bureaucracy or more red tape, if you want to call it that. And so, you know, speak to that if you wouldn't mind, Jed.
Yeah, absolutely. When you go back to the small germ that starts these companies, the founding moment, they're very different than these companies at scale. Today, you see all of these tourists, they come down to Silicon Valley, they take selfies in front of the like sign at Facebook, or they see Google's beautiful, colorful campus where it feels like you're still in school in like college or grade school, but it's aggrandized and there's much more money and it's much more interesting and entertaining. But those are really the artifacts or the symptoms of success. You have to go all the way back to the beginnings of these companies to really see what started the innovative process, what really triggered the innovation that built these enormous companies. And it's a funny thing. When you go all the way back to the very beginning, they're often very simple and they're often very ordinary. They're very mundane ideas that get these companies started. And I'll give you a couple examples. At Facebook, when Mark Zuckerberg first started Facebook, he was at Harvard, and all Harvard students, when you first get there, they give you this leather-bound book called The Facebook. It's just a physical book that they give you, and you can flip through and see everybody in this book. And you know, he sat down with this book, and he said, why don't I create a digital version of this book? It's not a really complex idea, right? He's just taking a physical object and turning it into a digital object. That's really the founding of that idea. Now, you could also say he probably got the idea from the Winklevoss twins who asked him to code up their own project, but he sat on that project and decided to code it himself. So it's a pretty simple idea, right? He didn't have to really come up with the idea. It's not this incredible, innovative idea. It was just a great idea at the right moment as the value seen for social emerged in over the internet and in the world. Look at something like the starting of Snap. Now, that's a really funny one, right? You have two guys at Stanford. And, you know, one guy has just sent a bleep pic to a girl. And he tells the other guy, you know, I really wish that picture could disappear.
Right.
Right. I mean, how mundane of a start is that? How everyday is that for the start of a company? And then Evan Spiegel, you know, he jumps up and down and says, that's a $1 million idea. But he was really wrong about that. It was a multi-billion-dollar idea, a deca-billion-dollar idea. But that's really the beginning of it. Even Google, which we all think is incredibly complex and intellectual and academic, if you look at the origins of Google, back when they were in their graduate program at Stanford, and you have a lot of these papers that are being pushed around in academia, and at the end of papers you have all these citations, and the papers that get cited the most are the ones that are most important. It's the backlinking across the citations. And so they used the concept of citations, but for backlinks for pages on the internet, and applied that to the internet as a method to rank search. And that's really what created PageRank search. Even that was a pretty simple concept. You're just taking from one concept that's already available in the physical world, the way citations work, and they create prioritization and importance of these papers, and they applied it to the digital world.
And it wasn't named after Larry Page at the time.
So I want to go back to, because you reminded me of a concept that we were talking about a decade ago in Jim Collins' Good to Great, right? We talked about how companies have to reinvent themselves and what's their real legacy. With what you wrote in Disrupt or Die, how do you see the differentiation between what Jim wrote and how companies – do you think companies will even ever get to that next level? So the Alphabets and the Facebooks, will they follow that pattern?
It's a great question. I think the problem with Good to Great is it's dated. It doesn't apply to the modern world we live in. And I'm actually going to apply it to legacy companies first. Jim Collins talks about, you know, he talks about getting the right people on the bus. It's you want the who before the what. But Silicon Valley never follows that, right? What Silicon Valley does is, you know, you have these founders who have no track record, so you don't really know who they are. You just invest in them when you see the what. What is the idea, or what is the platform they've built, or what is the app they've built? That's all you have to see. And I think the imperative today is you need the what before the who. You need the what before the how. You need to identify what is the product that is going to control your industry for the future, that's going to win your industry for the future. That's what everybody should be obsessed about, the innovative product or app that's going to take control of the future of your industry. That comes before everything else.
Yeah, I mean, some of the concepts in your book is really going to turn a lot of preconceived or just accepted notions on their head. What other sorts of models can we find in your book?
I think another concept that Jim Collins has is the level five leader, that you have humble servant-based leaders who steward great teams, and they have, you know, they really assemble the right team, they set the right strategy. The challenge is if you look at the people who are in charge of the world today, who are running the world's biggest company, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, they don't look like that at all, or Steve Jobs is actually the best example of it, although he's not with us anymore. They are completely the opposite of these humble level five leaders, and yet they're running the world's biggest companies. Look at Jeff Bezos, for example. One of his core leadership principles is leaders are right a lot. That's actually in the leadership principles written on the Amazon website. They expect leaders to know what they're doing, and maybe every now and then they'll find contradictory information and be willing to change their minds. But generally, they're just right a lot.
Yeah. You know, this morning I was watching your LinkedIn, and you'd actually put a pretty provocative question on whether Facebook helped the Russians were influencing the election. What do you want to say about that?
Yeah, the vote on LinkedIn is did Facebook disrupt democracy? And it's pretty interesting because it's kind of split 50-50. If you look at the long trail of things that have been coming up in the news, it's quite a sordid tale. And it goes all the way back to after the election when Mark Zuckerberg started to have this crisis of conscience, and he went on his tour of the 50 states, and then he decided to change the mission statement for Facebook. You know, they used to just talk about connecting people, but now they're really trying to bring the world together, so they have more of a positive agenda. He's doing small things like that to try and make Facebook a better platform for really uniting people. But what it's really done over the last couple of years is build these filter bubbles, right? These very divisive filter bubbles where people read and look at things and watch videos that confirm what they already believe, pushing people farther and farther into their own belief systems and their own groups. So you're getting increasing polarization, increasing division of the groups within societies and nations, you know, the red state and the blue state of America. And now we were seeing a lot of this new news emerge. You know, 10 million people were exposed to these Russian ads. 4.4 million people were exposed before the election. We're talking about a really tightly, closely contested election. So it's very plausible that Facebook swung the results of the election. We don't know for sure. You can't know exactly. But 4.4 million people is a lot of people when you look at the numbers that Trump won by in different different areas.
But I think the question you raised this morning, and the theme of your book, Disrupt or Die, this is where I think, again, applying these techniques beyond just even the product, it's that people can be very aware that disruption is happening all around us, whether they want it to happen or not.
Well, I would take it – excuse me. I would take it a step further and simply say that they're not aware. It's an unconscious awareness, so to speak, because it's happening regardless of what's going on around them. However, the intuitive people and you know, the people that we're talking about as far as the executives and the leadership, if they don't realize it in a conscious way, then they're going to get left behind. Does that make sense?
And even for those who are driving disruption, who are running these giant technology companies, many times the things they're trying to achieve, like bring people together, they achieve the exact opposite. They divide nations. They divide societies.
Right.
If you look at Elon Musk as an example, he's trying to save the world. He's trying to save humankind from itself. But a lot of the things he's pushing are really dangerous and can be used against humankind. One of the things that he's pushing right now is to regulate AI and the development of artificial intelligence. The problem is, even if he gets NATO to push through regulations and a lot of countries begin to adhere to these regulations, the countries that won't are the ones we have to worry about, countries like Russia or communist China. What if they don't follow these regulations? Do we really want Vladimir Putin and his world to be the country that invents the most dangerous invention of humankind? It would be terrible. We're playing into the hands of disaster.
Right.
Well, I think Putin even talked about this 1 or 2 weeks ago, that he was saying that AI itself, to your point, could be the most fearful technology we've ever developed, intentionally or unintentionally.
Absolutely. We definitely have a race to AI right now.
And then what happens when the AI becomes like everybody's fear in science fiction and everything else, where the report a couple of weeks ago from, you know, the local labs at Google or whoever it was, and I again apologize, that the robots weren't communicating correctly, and so they started chatting amongst themselves, and the engineers got a little concerned.
I mean, creating their own language?
No, it wasn't even that, but the point is that they were doing something that the engineers hadn't programmed, and at that point, they, you know, and granted, it was lower level, but still.
So, again, we have Jed Yue of Disrupt or Die, and he is offering his book when it gets released on October 10, 10-10. For 2 days, you can get it for 99 cents at Amazon.com.
So once again, you can reach Guardian Insight Group at 1-888-388-6739. If you'd like to learn more about Disrupt or Die, or you'd like to come have us talk with you about how we can help your company disrupt, get in touch with us. GigSV.biz, GIGSV.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo, with Jonathan Ziegler. And again, our special guest today is innovator and entrepreneur Jedediah Yue, who has written a book, Disrupt or Die. And I think, Jonathan, with the discussion we're having today, we're looking at the next Jim Collins.
Absolutely. I think, as Jed alluded to in the last segment, that the Jim Collins book had its time and its place. And I think, obviously, if you don't disrupt, you die. And so let's just be blunt. It's dead. And now we need to figure out what the next step is. And Jed's book is absolutely on the cusp of where I believe we need to be.
And I think what we've been talking about with Jed is that the themes and concepts in Jed's book, Disrupt or Die, applies beyond just Silicon Valley, although the title Silicon Valley, at the technology alone. There's so many other things happening in the world right now. Right before, in the last segment, we were talking about Facebook, and it's provocative, but did Facebook, was it influencing democracy? So, Jed, let's talk a little bit more about the global effects of disruption.
I think one of the really big concepts, one of the really big things that's changing the world is what I call the digital hand. So back when capitalism was invented, when you had Adam Smith and The Wealth of Nations, we talked about the invisible hand, this benevolent hand that raised the wealth of everybody and set the price based on supply and demand in markets. Today we have something else. We have what I call the digital hand. And the digital hand has two forces. First, it concentrates wealth more and more in the hands of the tech elite, a smaller and smaller number of people. And secondly, it automates away more and more jobs for the vast majority of the population. And that's a really dangerous thing because it creates the digital divide, the haves and the have-nots. And if you have too many have-nots, the world is going to become a very unstable, a fundamentally unsound place.
Modern rule of economics coming back to haunt us.
Yeah, it's again, something that the impact we don't yet know, but we know is coming.
Well, I think that's a good point, too, and not to belabor it by any means, but it is clear that the innovation cycle is getting compressed. It's clearer that communication cycles are becoming more and more compressed and also easier to have a global team come together, for example. And one of the points that Jed brought up in one of the previous segments was simply that you have to become more adept at making these cycles work in your favor, or you are going to be left behind.
And this is where I think is really important, understanding Disruptor Die versus other very good books on innovation. The way I look at it, we work with a lot of international companies. These are concepts that go beyond kind of the Western American ideals. This is actually something that can be applied to a Chinese startup.
Absolutely. It can be applied to a startup anywhere in the world.
And so you're a Chinese AI company, and we were just talking about in an earlier segment about the implications of artificial intelligence. How would they apply the concepts that you've put in this book as they're thinking about AI? And I mean, they don't necessarily know, they're not watching Terminator movies necessarily, they didn't grow up with them, or they don't know what Skynet is. What do you think about that, Jed?
The interesting thing about the book is it calls out how do you take all of the pieces that have already been developed in the world today and turn them into products that can take control of these value seams, these openings in the market. Today, AI is very much commoditized. It's very ironic. Some of the most sophisticated technology in the world today is just available as an open service on Amazon in their cloud or in Azure and Microsoft's cloud or in Google. And you can just use it as a service to help you build your meta service or your app. Open source has really changed the world. There are so many components that you can leverage and build upon. The actual proprietary part of innovation, the unique part that you bring, it's getting thinner and thinner and thinner, and yet it's still very powerful. So leverage continues to build for the innovator.
So we spent a lot of time today talking about entrepreneurs, startups, globally. Let's bring it back to your corporate executive, your corporate CTO, and you're listening to the things we're talking about today, and you're scared. And we always use the analogy, it's very hard to turn the Titanic, right? You spent all this time going from a small boat to a very, very large cruise ship, and now you have to turn. How can they apply the techniques in your book to a large corporation?
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's a great topic. One of the challenges when CTOs, CIOs, CEOs of large companies look at innovation, they try to manage it at the scale of their organization. They think, what can we do to make people move faster, to have ideas roll out of our idea factory out into application technology space faster? But that's a fallacy. You can't work on it at scale. You can't try and accelerate your application releases and expect to come up with the next great product. Great ideas come from small teams. You have to focus on the what, and it's the few. You can't work on a giant innovation factory. You have to go look and find that one idea that helps you take control of the future of your industry. That's what they're looking for. So don't try and operate at scale. Don't try and impact speed at scale. You're looking for the very few, the single best idea.
Jed, that's really great advice. And I'm sorry to say we're out of time. We hope to have you back on a future show if you're available.
I would love that.
It's great. And so just to remind you that Jed's book comes out, Disruptor Die comes out on October 10th, big launch. And for 2 days, October 10th and 11th, the ebook is available for 99 cents on Amazon.com.
And once again, if you need additional assistance or you'd like to learn more about Disruptor Die from Guardian Insight Group, give us a call at 1-888-388-6739. That's 888-388-OPEX. Or visit us at gigsv.biz, gigsv.biz. And we'll look forward to hearing you again, Jed. And thanks again for being in the studio with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. For questions or comments on today's program or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.